It's time for Message in the Bottle, brought to you by Bangor Wine and Cheese Company, 86 Hammond Street in downtown Bangor. We welcome in our friend Eric Meehan. Hello, Eric.
Hello, Richard. How are you?
Wonderful. How are you? How was Thanksgiving?
Thanksgiving was delightful, actually. It was we had a gender reveal. I'm going to be a nephew to another little boy, which is fun. Nella is actually, she's ecstatic because she's old enough that she just gets to order all of them around as opposed to having to deal with them. Which is, honestly, I don't think there's a greater existence for her. And the food, I mean, the food is, my mother-in-law owns Thanksgiving, and it's just a beautiful thing. The green bean casserole, I ate more than my fill, and it's a beautiful thing. Is there a better, first of all, there's nothing better than, like, having to give thanks. It's a very good thing that we all need to be reminded of, but honestly, and then everything else is just, so food and football. And then, of course, my brother-in-law is from England, yeah? So I found myself up at crazy hours watching, let's be honest, some of the saddest flopping, but most interesting, sport that I've watched in a while. And it was peppering him because, of course, everybody knows I volunteered to coach soccer, not ever having played the sport myself. So I got to ask crazy questions like, why did they arbitrarily tack on extra minutes? And the answers I got were not entirely satisfactory, but that's cool. That's cool. So it was lovely. And I hope yours and Carrie's were good as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Best holiday of the year for my money.
Yeah. And of course, the dogs.
Yes.
We certainly tuned into the dogs, of course, and not only to see some of your favorite guests, but to see how our dogs would react, which is always, it's part of the fun. It really is. And I must say, speaking of dogs, Greta, after this weekend of little kids, and of course, our in-laws' dog and everything, she has slept pretty much nonstop since we got home. That's really funny.
Back to the peace and quiet. Yeah. Thank you. Yes.
I'm serious. I mean, I brought her into the store on Monday, and everybody commented like, "Oh, she doesn't want to get up." I'm like, "No, she doesn't. She doesn't want to. Not unless you have food." I hope everybody out there in Radio Land had a great Thanksgiving. It's a delightful time, and it's one of the most sort of pure holidays, I think. Forgetting, of course, Look,
yes.
We're here to talk about wine, and we're going to talk about wine in a different part of the world, of course, with its own colonialization problems. But that's not. Listen, we're talking wine. First of all, we're going to hit Uruguay, and then we're going to hit a recap of South America because next week we're going to start to move on to other parts of the Southern Hemisphere before we sort of wrap up for the year. Uruguay. Uruguay is a latecomer to the wine scene from South America, and it is spotty at best still, which is very unfortunate, and I don't quite understand why, given that the supply chain from Argentina and Chile seemed to be fairly steady, and it's not like it's removed by, a sea or anything like that. But it's South America's fourth largest producer. The third is actually Brazil, but it's Brazil sort of keeps every. We'll talk about that in a second. But it's the fourth largest producer in South America, but the third most important in terms of international shipping and interest. The modern era there began actually with Basque Italian immigrants. Basque and Italian immigrants bringing clippings, but they were fleeing, actually a lot of them were vineyard workers, they were fleeing the effects of the phylloxera lapse. As people recall, that is when basically 99% of the European vineyards were wiped out because of the phylloxera lapse. Sorry. The big grape in Uruguay, the one that's really going to make it or break it, I think, is Tanat. They're called Harig, but Tanat is originally a Basque Speaking of the people who came, it's a Basque on the Atlantic side, especially in the sort of the northern Basque country, where you're technically in France. Tanat is a tremendously grippy. You can sort of think of it as tannin, you know, Tanat, same root. It's a very dark, deep red grape, and it, like Malbec in Argentina, kind of shines in its South American environs in a way that it does not in France. It takes on this sort of more generous and plump attitude. I don't exactly, again, know why. I mean, obviously, one thinks of terroir will certainly factor into that. But it seems more than that. It seems like the aesthetics of the winemakers are to let it ripen a little bit more, plant it in places where it's maybe a little bit more favorable. It's Uruguay in general. It's a very similar latitude. Their main wine regions, that is, mainly around Montevideo, but some further up towards Brazil. But it's very similar latitudes to the other very good wine regions, of course, like Mendoza and the valleys in Chile, centered around Santiago. But it's wetter. It doesn't have the Humboldt current that we talked about, nor does it have the sweeping winds down the Andes. So it doesn't have these really naturally favorable conditions like the other places in South America, which is perhaps why it has not taken off quite as well. The ripening is more determined by some other Antarctic winds, but not altitude. The ripening cool, gradual, and you know it's what it is. We'll see kind of where it goes. They do some interesting other European varietals there. Albariño, which we know from the Galician coast of Spain, right? Trebbiano. But it's all sort of experimental, and like I said, we'll see where it goes. I mentioned Brazil. Brazil is the third largest producer, but the wine is and it's mostly kept in country. Which means, by the way, yes, they drink a lot of wine there. But the wine is mostly, it's fizzy, it's sweet. It's grown near the centers of population, which are basically fertile, humid, damp areas. So these are not great for growing grapes. Mostly it's actually hybrids. And we talk about hybrids with sort of enthusiasm up here in Maine. Because we're trying to sort of get there. This is a place that I don't know if it will ever get there. The best known hybrid is a grape called Isabella, but it's basically all these hybrids account for like 85% of the viticulture and what they're designed to do, because hybrids are made, right? Like it's not just let's screw around with stuff. They're designed to resist this or do this or have a lower. Yeah. So these are mostly designed to resist rot, which is, I don't know, it's just not that appealing to me. there are in some of the hotter, drier areas, there are some serious attempts at like dry farming, but these are all so nascent that it's difficult for me to, you know, give any sort of serious estimation. Otherwise, South America, there's some efforts in Bolivia, where the world's literally highest vineyards are. But it's not, besides that, you're so close to the equator, you're not getting anything really good. Again, a lot of the natural favorable conditions like drying winds, things like that, they just don't exist there. So we've really sort of touched on the main, of course, like I said, Chile, Argentina and Uruguay. Now, it's worth noting, you know, the quickly the grapes to remember. Check out the Malbecs, of course, both from Chile and Argentina. Carmenere, especially from Chile, which is the, quote, lost Bordelaise grape. Tannat, that we just talked about today. Torrontés, which is this beautiful white grape with sort of this quasi-Germanic feel, which is from the Salta Plains in Argentina, especially, but other places as well. And then, of course, you know, some marvelous international varietals, attempts from Syrah, Chardonnay, et cetera, in Chile, to your Cabs, your Malbecs, your Bordelaise varietals, et cetera, in and around Mendoza. It's a great place. There's still some fantastic values and some serious efforts going on there. So check out South America, and next week we'll start in on, I think, South Africa next week. Yeah.
That sounds fantastic. By the way, I'm impressed with what appears to be your reach in the newsletter.
My reach. Oh, yes. You know, what's very difficult is that I'm up against said brother-in-law, who I'm pretty sure is 7'5". it's really, you know, I always ask my sister-in-law, like, just give me a guy I can have a beer with, you know, watch a football game with. She took me literally, that I needed a tall, handsome British soccer player. I'm like, cool. Well done. But he's awesome. And indeed, I can sit down and have a beer and watch a match with him. So she did well. But yes, I am still, even at 6 foot, I am the short guy.
You tower over me. So, and I would, even if we were the same height, I would, of course, look up to you.
Oh, stop it, you. All right, I'll talk to you guys next week, eh?
You got it. Thanks, Eric. Eric May and Bangor Wine and Cheese Company. Message in the bottle here on Downtown.